There's a change happening in the way we live, the way we work, the way we spend our money and make our decisions. We are evolving to be more conscious in our actions in a way that serves the world and makes it a better place. Welcome to The Ethical Evolution. The Ethical Evolution podcast is brought to you by the Ethical Change Agency. I'm Bindi, CEO and founder, and I am honoured to bring you the stories of those who create change through paying it forward and giving back. Ethical business owners and holistic healers who are determined to create collective change in the world. Once we have a change in consciousness and through collective change, we can become one. My next guest approached me to be part of the Ethical Evolution and share her story of her quest to change gender parity globally, allowing for diversity in leadership in the workplace and in government. By making that collective change, the world can truly change as we are all responsible for making our contribution by noticing where it's needed. Susan Sloan is the author of A Seat at the Table, Women, Diplomacy and Lessons for the World. She works for a global nonprofit advocacy organization in Washington, D.C., engaging with diplomats, government officials, community organizers, and international leaders. I'm truly grateful for connecting with Susan and know that we need to spread her message as far and wide as possible. Welcome, Susan, to the Ethical Evolution.
Thanks for having me, Bindi. It's great to be here.
Now, we were just chatting off air, and you're normally based in Washington, D.C., but you're coming to us from Atlanta, Georgia today. Can you tell us about your background and what you do?
Sure. Well, I work in Washington, D.C. I've been there since 2012. I focus on diplomacy, where I work for a global non-government organization advocating on behalf of different people, with diplomats, interfaith leaders, and government officials. And through that work and through diplomacy, it led me to writing a book about women in diplomacy.
Great. So tell us about the book.
Well, the book was published in April 2019. I am in a virtual COVID book tour right now, so it's a little bit different than what I had anticipated. But the book is called A Seat at the Table, Women, Diplomacy, and Lessons for the World. And I began a journey of interviewing women leaders, diplomats, ambassadors, foreign ministers, and government officials about their seat at the table, the challenges that they face getting there, and also ways governments and foreign ministries have provided policies to enact gender parity, to have an increased amount of women at the table in leadership and in all places of their workforce. And so really, it became a book more about gender parity and equity and equality than anything else. But it was such an honor to be able to sit down with these women leaders, whether in person or over their phone, and hear their stories and to give their stories a platform to share with the world.
Wow, you must have got so many insights from those interviews.
Oh, completely. They were my treasure trove, yeah. My personal mentors almost, yes.
So are you seeing a change in, you know, that parity and also seeing more women at the table?
It depends the country, to tell you the truth. And you're coming from Australia. And one of my favorite stories comes from an ambassador from Australia who's currently the deputy chief of mission in Washington, D.C. Ambassador Katrina Cooper shared with me their women in leadership strategy, which the foreign ministry enacted. And what she found was that when she joined the foreign ministry, her incoming class of diplomats was about even between men and women. However, as she rose in the ranks of leadership, when she finally got to the upper echelon of leadership and she became the senior legal advisor, she looked around the leadership table and she was one of very few women. And then looking at managers and supervisors, there were very few women as well. So she thought, oh, we got to change this. And she went to the secretary, the leader of the foreign ministry, and asked him, hey, do you see this? And he hadn't. And he said, oh, great. How about you go around and you change a few things? And she realized from talking with colleagues that really had to come from the top. Culture change has to come from the top. And so They hired an outside consultant. The outside consultant took a look at what was going on in the foreign ministry, and they made significant recommendations that completely changed the foreign ministry and got them to a place of gender parity within leadership and management, and also solutions that created a workplace that benefited both men and women.
Mm.
And I can share some of those things with you, but that's just one little story from Australia even. And so it depends on the country. I would say the United States, we're a little bit behind other countries.
Yeah. And I mean, even, you know, around how much women get paid in comparison to men, the stats on that are shocking, aren't they?
There's a huge disparity, And I've actually been speaking with many different friends and contacts and colleagues about this. If you don't have women in leadership positions creating policies that would help both men and women in addition to pay, then you're not going to see any change. And so there's an idea that you have to look at who's around those board meeting tables. What's the split between men and women? Also socioeconomic status, diversity, race, religion, all of it. Does it represent the populations that the company is representing or the government is representing? And if it's not, then you're going to have decisions that only have one lens. And so there's this, I mean, theme that I heard throughout the book. If you're going to have a boardroom or leadership of the C-suite with only gray-haired white men, you're going to get policies that don't look at other contingencies of the population. So looking at pay, oh my gosh, we're not going to reach this parity in pay if we don't have people making the decisions and the policies that allow these opportunities to really happen. So we have to get women in leadership positions to create policies so people see a different lens.
Totally. And, you know, it's interesting. I'm noticing, because I also work full-time in the Queensland government, and I'm seeing a real change in the authority that I work in. The entire C-suite is women. There's a lot, well, we've got a premier who is a female, and there's a lot more ministers and senior government officials who are women. You know, from that ethnicity and equality, we're seeing a lot more awareness around that now, particularly around the Black Lives Matter movement. That people's attitudes have changed, and even in the way we market things now, we change our perspective of, you know, the images we use. So I think that's interesting. There's definite change happening here.
That's interesting you mentioned the images, and that's something from the story from Australia that I learned. In part of their strategy, they looked at the government building, at the artwork that was displayed, and the conference room names. And what they found was that all the conference rooms were named after men or flowers.
Yep.
Can you believe that? And I think back to all the times I've been to conferences in Washington, D.C., all the conference room names are either Washington, Jefferson, or Cherry Blossom.
Yep.
They're never named after women.
Yep.
And so when you have a workforce going into a conference room that's never named after a woman, what message are you sending? In addition to that, with the artwork and the photography, they wanted to make sure that they historically had representation of different Australians that helped inform policy, and they didn't want to diminish that. But they also wanted to show women that made differences in Australia's government and foreign policy. So when they couldn't find historical photography representing women, what they did was they kept historical photos, and then right next to them, they put contemporary photos of women in leadership to have both representations. And while many people may think, oh, that's such a little thing, an image is such a little thing, however, it's not a little thing. When you have people walking through your doors, they have to be able to see themselves there.
Yeah.
They have to be able to see themselves there. And that's, I think, one of the main things that companies aren't really looking at is what are people actually seeing when they walk through their doors?
Yeah.
That can have a huge impact.
Yeah. And I know, again, here in Queensland, they've actually mandated to have Indigenous art in a lot of the government buildings, and actually named the meeting rooms after Indigenous words and names. So
important.
Yeah.
So important.
Yeah. So that is a big change. Now, if you were to put it in a nutshell, what would you say your mission is?
Right now, my mission is to educate and advocate for gender parity throughout all levels of society and the workforce. I believe that if we have a more of an equal mix of both men and women, or however anyone identifies, around the table, we will create better solutions for the world. We see issues through a different lens, each of us, and our backgrounds are so different, and the way we solve problems are so different. And that's why we need this diversity of thought. Mm. And if we don't have diversity of thought, we're not going to be able to tackle this next era of issues and challenges we're facing. I mean, look, we have huge issues of terrorism, migration, technology, and now pandemics. Mm. And if you look at countries who are doing better, are faring better than other countries, they have a mixture of both men and women in leadership around the table confronting these issues. Mm. If you look at countries, and data is proving this right now, if you look at the countries that only have the male gender around the table confronting these issues, the countries are not doing well in the pandemic. They have higher death rates and they have higher coronavirus cases.
Wow. That's mind blowing. And you know, I was a bit blown away just on that. One of the few countries that has not really been touched by the pandemic is Thailand. They've had, I think, one death. That's it.
Amazing. Yeah. That's amazing. I'm curious their reporting. I will say that different countries, the different reporting measures.
Oh, yeah.
And I do think there will be some disparities in reporting. I know that Russia's reported certain numbers that people are skeptical of. Mm. But I think it's curious to know about which countries are doing better and why, and the way their societies are treating this pandemic. I also find that many different countries that embrace cleanliness or embrace almost this individual way of dealing with issues that you take it upon yourself for the betterment of society, that they are faring better. People are wearing masks, people are washing their hands, and that those countries are doing better. And also the leadership, if the leadership is showing that they're doing it too, then that also has a huge effect.
That's right. Now, can you tell us about, you know, some of the changes you've helped to make already through the work that you do?
Yeah, well, so my work and my day job is a little bit different than the book work that I've done. Okay. And in my day job, I'm working in advocacy and diplomacy on particular issues that are very, very different than what I do with the book.
Yep.
So with the book, I've really been able to look at these issues of gender equity and equality and parity through storytelling. And it's become not only a passion of mine, but almost this resolve inside of me that spreading these stories and sharing these messages, I believe the more people that listen to them and hear them, that they'll be able to change their own culture of where they work and where they live. Mm. And previously, I worked in a position where I was focused on Holocaust education, and I was taking groups of different leaders to Poland, to the Czech Republic, to Hungary, and then to Israel. And we would have Holocaust survivors traveling with us, and we would sit in the barracks in Auschwitz in Poland, and they would tell their testimony. They would tell their story of surviving the Holocaust. And each time I heard a survivor speak at the end, what they would say to the group was that this is now your story. This is what you need to carry. And you are now my storyteller. And you need to share this with everybody else. Mm. And so this idea came to me when I was writing this book that all these women that spoke with me, these women, amazing women leaders, each of them said to me when we interviewed that they had never shared a particular story before publicly. Mm. And that touched me. And I realize I have an obligation to share these stories because then they become other people's stories. And then other people can start making changes. And it's a ripple effect, right?
Yeah.
I can't do it alone. And so really to reach gender parity, it takes each of us, both men and women, making these small changes. And over time, it's going to have a huge effect on society.
Mm. Yeah. And I guess that's the great alignment that we have is that, you know, this podcast is all about sharing those stories and you know, spreading that collective change. So, yeah, absolutely, completely, 100% on board with you there.
Well, you're a storyteller too. I think bringing the stories to light is so important. And this idea of ethical change and what is ethics in each of the things that we're doing. And that comes out. And even the women that I interviewed spoke about this idea of leadership with integrity and honesty and resilience. And I believe that has an ethical lens to it.
Mm, absolutely. Which gives me a great segue to my next question that I want to ask you, which is, can you define what being ethical means to you?
I can. Being ethical means to me this semblance of, we'll use integrity again, of integrity, not only to yourself, but to others. And I believe that ethics is something that even when someone's not looking, that you're going to do and say the right thing. And it's not just when people are looking. And there's this idea, I think, in society and in the workplace and different cultures that when people are watching, yes, why wouldn't you be ethical? Why wouldn't you do the right thing? It's when people aren't watching.
That's it.
Are you going to do the right thing? And that should be something that's in each of us. And most people, you know, they find out that when no one's looking, they have this moral decision to make. And no one will know what they decide. And that's the power inside of you to make that ethical choice. And I think each of us hopefully rises to the occasion of that. And I in the news, you know, we've seen so many people not, right? And the different leaders of Enron and then the Madoffs of the world. And people make, you know, really unethical decisions on a grand scale that affects so many people. And we look at that and say, how could they do that? And it's this idea, I think, if you make one little decision that's not ethical, that's unethical, then you can make so many other little decisions and then keep adding up. So when a big decision comes and you make it and it's unethical, that's how you did it. You started off chipping away at your own morality. And so I think for myself and for each of us, we play a part every day in making ethical choices, whether someone's looking or not.
Oh, I love that, chipping away at your morality. I love that. You know, and it is. It's forming a habit as well, isn't it? Like being conscious of those choices that you make.
Mindfulness, yeah, right, exactly.
Yeah, and it is a habit. So, you know, it's again like an exercise that you practice, and it just becomes part of who you are. Wow, really love that. So I'm interested to know what your future plans are. You were saying you're recording an audio book and doing your pandemic book tour at the moment. what else have you got ahead for you?
Well, so right now I've been working on getting the book and the message out there, whether it be on podcasts, writing pieces for different journals and magazines, and also speaking with different organizations. I'm still working full-time in the pandemic remotely right now, which many of us are.
Yeah.
And I'm with my family as well. And I haven't lived with my family in years, with my parents who are, I would say, of a different generation. And it's been so special to spend time with them. And so I don't know what the future holds right now. I wish that I had a crystal ball to say, you know what, I'll be writing another book in a year. But right now the world is so uncertain and I have to sit in that uncertainness. And I think many of us are feeling that way right now with the uncertainty. And so all I can do is keep trying every day, wake up, do my job, get the book message out there when I can, and keep growing and also stay sane. And so right now my goal is to stay sane because you know what? It is hard right now. And I think if I would say, oh, everything's great and I'm going to write a new book really soon, that would be lying. And I'm not going to lie about that. I would like to write more books in the future, but I want to see how this first one does and to get the message out there. And I do have other ideas of books in the future, but this story of gender parity was so important to me that I think it's going to take my focus for a while to really get this book to be with people and the message to resonate, because I hope governments and private sector companies read it because there's solutions that they could enact. And I think that we'd be in a much better place with everything going on in the world if we start enacting these major solutions.
Yeah, well, it it has to start at the top, like you said, hey. And yeah, thank you for being so honest on that, because I was expecting you to say, oh, I've got another book in the works. yeah, you know, I guess at a time like this, particularly in America, you guys, it's hard for you to see beyond the now right now, given what's happening there. But yeah, I hope things do lift for you soon, because, wow, I think the stories that you've got to share are huge, and I hope that you reach the people that you need to. If people want to find out more about your book and what you do, where can they go?
Sure. They can go to susansloan.com, SusanSloan.com. My book is on Amazon. It's also at Barnes & Noble. And the audiobook will be available hopefully early fall, in addition to the hardcover copy. But the paperback and the digital version are ready. And I'm also on Twitter at Real Susan Sloan. I just started my Twitter account not too long ago. So please follow me so you can share these amazing articles with you of how to help your companies and your governments. And I'm sharing great resources on there too. I realized that in the digital age, you have to be on multiple platforms, as you know, Bindi.
Yep.
So it's really important. But there is one thing I do want to share with each of you, just one little snippet that if we all look at percentages, and I know people don't like to think about quotas, but I will say for targets, if you're trying to create culture change within your organization, an ethical culture change, the split, the secret sauce is 40% men, 40% women, and 20% either. That 40-40-20 split will get you significant culture change within your organization. So your leadership should look like that. Your board should look like that. Your managers should look like that. And if you create that level of gender parity within your organization will be more profitable and your workforce will be happier, because people are going to come up with better solutions because more diversity of lenses will be in the room to create them.
We'll have a chat offline, but I'm just thinking of a few people I can connect you with that are really going to help you get that message out there, that are actually in the States as well. You know, a theme that I've spoken with them on is, you know, again, if we take away the layers here and we actually look at an organization and look at the people, not their outcomes or their tasks or whatever it is, that's where we get real success. So I think, I think there's some collaborations I can hook up for you there.
Oh, that'd be great. Mm. Yeah, I mean, the ambassador of Finland told me, she said, Susan, the best leadership lesson I've learned is listening.
Mm.
It is listening to others and then being able to take their ideas and make them happen. And that's what creates success. And you have to see people and you have to hear them.
That's it.
And I think each of us need to do that. And so just as you mentioned, it's about those human connections. It's seeing people individually. It's empowering individuals. And the women that I spoke with for this book, each shared that, of that empowerment and encouraging others, and how that they were encouraged and they were empowered early on in their career, which allowed them to rise in the ranks of leadership. And so there's multiple things we can do in all of our sectors, no matter what we're doing, to empower others and encourage others to see them and to listen and then to hear them.
Yeah, because, I mean, we all know and have worked in organizations where you've become a number or a deliverable and not an actual human. And I think the moment you connect with people as humans, that's where the magic sauce is.
Completely, 100%, 100%. At the end of the day, we're each a human.
Yeah.
That's what it comes down to. And we have human needs like anyone else. And workplaces that are recognizing that and seeing that are doing much better with how their workforce is able to thrive, right? Even in this pandemic of how people are leading, are they seeing people as numbers to cut? Or are they trying to help their employees make sure their mental health is stable, make sure they have a paycheck, but making sure that they're okay? And we're seeing now companies that are leading and companies that are not. And leadership plays a huge part in that, of making sure employees feel valued and also that they're an individual within the collective being of the organization.
So true. And I think the other thing as well is understanding that as that human, when they come to the office or connect remotely, they got a whole world outside of that that they bring with them.
Yes.
And
yes.
We've got to understand that.
Oh, absolutely. Every leader I spoke with for this book mentioned that what made them strong as a leader is that they're able to have their personal life, whether it be with a family, a spouse, children, or their family from back home, friends, and also their professional life. And it made them strong to have both. And we need to recognize that. And employees that work for employers that have that balance, that work-life balance, oh my gosh, it's so impactful. It's so impactful. And I mentioned this in the prologue of the book that Gen Z is more interested in work-life balance than any other thing when they're looking at a company. So benefits, resources, salary, none of that matters to them. Their number one priority is work-life balance. And so we need to think about that and listen to that.
Oh yeah,
and do something about that.
Yeah, and the future generations as well. Like I see my nephew who's like 14, and I just see people like that, and the views that they've got of the world are so different to those of us that have been here a lot longer. They're actually conscious of mental health. They're conscious about their future, and at that age, I never would have thought that way.
We were not having these conversations, I would say, even 20 years ago.
No.
Something has shifted in our society, and we are having conversations about mental health. We're having conversations about drug abuse in a different way than ever before. And we need to collectively look at what people are saying, hear them, and then come up with solutions to really create a society that we work and live well in. And I will say that America, we have a challenging time. We are hard workers. We love to work. We are definitely behind many other countries that have created systems for work-life balance. And that's something that we can learn from. I do think in a capitalist country where many things are financially driven, we come with a different mindset. But what was it? I think it was in Time magazine. Don't quote me on this, but a few years ago, there was a study about happiness and what it said, and maybe inflation changes this. However, at the time I read the article, it said, if you make $75,000, this is US dollars, that's the level of happiness. Increasing that amount of money does not increase your happiness.
Wow.
And that's something really fascinating, that financially, how much money you make, once you get to a certain level, no extra amount of money is actually going to increase your happiness. And that's something we need to think about as society. If that doesn't increase our happiness, then what does? And what we're finding, it's really these human connections, which I find really fascinating, especially in a time of pandemic when you can't have so many human connections, that many people are suffering with depression and loneliness and sadness because we're not able to see people face-to-face as much as we used to and have those intimate connections. And so really, what is life made up of? It's made up of relationships. It's all about relationships. And I think our workforce is going to change. I think our own personal friendships are going to change from this. And we are going to have a time where we say, was it before the pandemic or after the pandemic, right?
Yeah. So I call it BC, before COVID. Yeah.
That's so great. I love it.
Yeah. Like, wow. I can so agree with you on that. And, I look at, it's funny. I was actually watching Billions last night. You know, the TV show Billions.
Yes, I love that show. Yes.
I was watching that last night, and he'd reached the point of, getting $10 billion, and he wasn't happy. He realized he wasn't happy. He did all the things he thought he was meant to do, and he wasn't happy. Spoiler alert, guys, if you haven't watched it. there's so many entrepreneurs I've spoken to who have reached millions and millions of dollars. And it's the it's the giving, it's the sharing, it's the connection is where they get the true joy.
Exactly. When it's something bigger than you. And I think in Billions, I think he's secretly in love with Wendy, but
know that.
Right? I mean, so he's like, he's got divorced, he doesn't see his kids a lot, like Wendy's got another man kind of, but it is these human connections. And I'll be very, very candid, Bendy. Even during this time, I have reflected within myself of what are the things that are important to me? And I realize that it really, it comes down to relationships. Mm. And that's one of the reasons I even left Washington for just this small period of time to be with my family. I live in a very small apartment near the White House. Mm-hmm. Protests were starting to happen in the streets of Washington. And there were helicopters flying so low to my house, I couldn't do any audio recordings for anything. But it was also a very frightening time because we had National Guard and special forces on our streets and tanks on our streets. And I photographed actually what was going on in Washington. And I wrote a Medium article. I write a few Medium articles. So if you get a chance to check out Medium, I'm writing on there. And I used the photography and words to describe this moment in time in Washington, D.C. and in our country. And protests need to happen. Legislation needs to happen. And so many things need to happen. But being in this historical moment, it felt surreal because here we're facing, in the United States, two pandemics.
Mm.
We are facing huge racial injustice that we have seen for hundreds of years. And we are also facing COVID-19, another health pandemic.
Mm.
And how we decide to handle these two things and how we decide to move forward is going to determine how we are as a country. And that's one of the reasons I, after was in Washington for that week and then flew down to Atlanta, I realized that I hadn't seen my family in so long. I don't know what's going to happen in the next few months with my parents, with my sister, with my niece, and even the world. That relationships, that's what life is made up of. And I knew it was important to come down here and be with them just for even a few weeks, right? Just for even a month.
Yeah, I think that's probably the best decision you've made. Really. I know, through the pandemic, I was actually helping my parents get supplies. They don't live near me, so we were trying to connect, and it was so hard whenever we'd see each other, we couldn't hug or touch each other, and it was just like, here's your food, off you go. So, you know, I totally know what you're going through, and now I think that's completely changed our relationships as a family. Like, we're a lot closer and we understand how important that is. So if that's a blessing from COVID, then we'll take that.
Yeah, we should take the blessings where we can.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes, we should.
And take the good things when we can, because there's so many challenges we're facing as different nations and individuals right now that it's seizing the small moments. Mm. And even if it's just for a moment of happiness or a moment of joy or a moment of friendship or camaraderie or family or love, and just take that moment for what it is. Because right now, you never know which moment's going to come next.
That's right. Oh, 2020's had them all, hasn't it?
Oh, gosh, yes.
Now, Susan, I've got the big question for you. And I can't wait to see what your answer is. What's the change you'd like to see in the world, and how can we bring it to life?
The change I want to see in the world is gender parity in all forms, in workplace culture, in leadership, in pay, in who is raising children, how society sees both gender and diversity. I believe that each country, no matter who's listening to this, no matter where you're from, we have faced different histories where we have conquered land, conquered people. And we have not allowed space for voices that are different and that have different opinions. And so when I talk about this idea of seeing gender parity at all levels of our world and society, that's what I mean it as. And I believe that each of us has an opportunity and an obligation to lift up voices that are different than our own. And so that means when you're talking to a neighbor that has a different political opinion, to not shout at them because they don't believe the thing that you believe, but to listen and to hear them. You're not going to probably change their opinion, but you can listen and hear them. And maybe by giving them that grace, they will listen and hear you.
Mm.
We each have a unique space when we're, especially in the workplace, that we can echo other people's ideas to uplift them. When you're sitting around the room, especially at a board table, now maybe your virtual Zoom board table, and you see, look around and the faces that you see and the voices that you hear, if they are only from one lens, if there is not a level of different diversity, whether it be race, culture, religion, gender, socioeconomic status, however you see diversity, if you don't see that around the table, do something about it. Mm. Ask where those people are. The first step is noticing, and then bring other people there. Now is not the time for sharp elbows to elbow other people out. Now is the time to embrace people, to take your elbows in and allow them space to get in there. 6 feet apart, social distance. I mean, don't get too close. But now is the time. And that's what the change that I want to see. And I'm going to do whatever I can do, whether it's sharing different people's ideas on LinkedIn that are voices that are different than mine, listening to different people that have different political, social, cultural ideas than I do, hearing them, sharing resources with friends and family so they see through different lenses and not just their own. And each of us can do that. Each of us can have these difficult conversations, and now is the time to do it. There's no better time but today.
Oh, amen. That was incredible. I especially love your bit about listening to someone else's opinion, even if you don't agree with it, particularly in a political view. I think, you know, we're all too quick to jump on others when we don't have the same beliefs. And I think that that's the kind of stuff that starts wars. So, yeah,
it does. I
completely agree with you.
Yeah, listening to others, I think there's this power in listening. And I learned this through writing the book and even a little bit before that in work of diplomacy. In diplomacy, you're constantly listening, right? You usually don't say your piece until the very, very end of a conversation. You want to get the other person to say as much as possible and get as much information out before you have to state your position and make your ask. So listening has been a part of my skill set in Washington, D.C. that I use typically every single day. But what I realized how it translated is that, you know, Washington, D.C. is a very political town. It's our nation's capital, the United States. You're there for a reason.
Yep.
And I have colleagues and friends and contacts who are part of different political parties and have very different beliefs. And sometimes I am at a dinner party or a cocktail party and someone will say something, and seeing people's reactions always fascinates me.
Yeah.
And the thing is, when you don't give a reaction and you just start to listen, you'll find out why people think something, their point of view. And if you take out the emotion of immediate anger or disgust, you're actually able to learn something yourself. And there's been times that I'm like, oh, you know, I would never thought about that way. That is fascinating. Now, I may not agree, but my job is not to agree. My job is to listen. And each of us can do that. And I know it's challenging, the political situation. Trust me, in America, it's challenging here right now. But I still try to listen. And I do believe that you are able to get somewhere in the middle of maybe moderation between two sides if each side is willing to listen and give a little bit. I do think we need to give a little bit more on each when you have differing opinions. That ability to meet somebody somewhere in the middle only comes from listening first.
Yeah. And you know what? It's actually a real habit of mine. Whenever I have to go into a meeting, I just listen, and people are like, well, you're going to speak up? You're going to say something? Well, I was just waiting for everybody to, you know, have their piece and then I'll give mine. It's always a habit of mine is I'll absorb and then I'll come back. So yeah, listening is so, so important.
It's a strong skill set. And leaders who listen actually get more information out of their teams than giving their opinion first. And you're able to foster more creativity when you do that. Many of the ambassadors I spoke with and foreign ministers and government officials said that's a tool that they use constantly with their teams. So they brainstorm differently. And men and women do this differently. I mean, in Washington, D.C., many of the women that I interviewed who are from different countries mentioned that men colleagues in their field tend to throw out their idea first and say, this is how we're going to do it.
Yep.
And we are going to go this way. Follow me. That really stifles creativity. It stifles collaboration and cooperation. And so teams function better One, under the leadership of women usually, but two, with this idea of openness and listening. Mm. And women bring that to the table. They do. And each of us can learn from that.
And women are such great collaborators, aren't they?
Hear, hear. Yes.
Look at us now.
Yes.
On that note, I have to thank you, Susan, for being a part of the Ethical Evolution.
Thank you so much for having me, Bindi. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to the Ethical Evolution podcast. If you're an ethical business owner, change maker, or holistic healer who's determined to make a change in the world and you need support to spread your message, visit ethicalchangeagency.com to collaborate.